We'll do it live!
You are listening to the AMC Report with your host, Ryan Dawson.
Okay, joining me today on the program is Mark Sloboda from the Center for Conservative Studies in Moscow, and he's in Moscow, Russia right now. We're going to be talking about ISIS, but there was just a recent bombing about an hour ago in France, killing 11 or 12 people. I think it's up to 12 people now. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that before we get into ISIS, because it's the normal sort of routine in the media. Apparently, this was a satirical magazine that made fun of Muhammad the Prophet, and this is what they're
Charlie
saying anyway.
Hebdo.
Yeah, and so it has been bombed, and some of the and for once they didn't kill themselves. It seems like the attackers got away and are at large. And I wanted your 2 cents on this attack. Is this actually blowback for once? I mean, I know everyone talks about blowback, but I think a lot of those are intended consequences. Do you think this might be actual blowback for financing terrorists all over the world?
Well, I mean, it's too early to say anything for certain now. As you've said, they haven't even amazingly caught or killed any of those responsible so far. They're still at large in Paris. And from everything that I've read so far from the police statements, these are a professional. They identified them as a commando team. They've already killed 2 police, as well as I think 10 of the journalists and staff at this Charlie Hebdo satirical magazine in Paris. Until we know a little bit more, what we know so far is that they were yelling Allahu Akbar. I mean, that's not exactly a surprise. That should shock no one. That they were claiming that they were getting justice for the Prophet Muhammad. Again, that's no surprise. Charlie Hebdo is famous for depicting in cartoon form, which is blasphemy to many extreme fundamentalist sects of Islam, to depict the Prophet Muhammad in any kind of iconography. But it must be said that Charlie Hebdo is also famous for satirizing the Catholic Church, Judaism, and just about everything else except possibly for secular liberalism. I don't think they've ever criticized secular liberal extremists, but I think we could probably count a few of those as well. So it's too early to say definitively, but I mean, and we have to, first of all, sympathize with
I say with a grain of salt, because there was that shooting in Australia and that got immediately blamed on ISIS or whatever, and it turned out not to be the case, so.
Yes, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, we have lone wolves that, you know, indigenous, you know, the Algerians and French have a long and terrible history. So I don't really want to jump to any conclusions. And you know,
maybe it was a used car salesman.
Yeah.
in Iran, from Iran, attacking the Saudis from
Mexican
cartels. Remember that story?
I'm gonna go with that. That's probably not the case. Definitely. I'm fairly certain of that one. But you know, we have to sympathize with the victims, because I don't have any respect for this satirical magazine. If anyone watches them, they are crude. They show disrespect to foreign cultures. And, you know, we live in a world where the majority of people do not believe, the majority of the countries of the world do not have or do not believe in absolute freedom of the press or otherwise. In fact, neither actually does France or the United States. It just depends on which things they choose to censor and self-censor.
I'm just shocked that the French would be rude.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that's shocking everyone about as much as terrorists yelling Allahu Akbar. You know, we live in a world where everyone does not believe the same things we do. In fact, I probably believe many different things that you do, and many of our listeners. And in that world, unless you're willing to crusade around the world and force your beliefs on the rest, you should have a modicum of respect when you do choose to criticize. And I don't think that the satirical magazine, as I said, it's quite crude and crass, has that modicum of respect.
Well, it's pretty soft, Mark, because I can't say that I'm not mean to to certain ideologies because, but you know, there's a way to do it in an adult fashion.
I'm not saying that they should be, and I'm certainly not saying that they, you know, deserved what they got. But you should be realist about it and accept the consequences of your actions for the world you live in. We cannot force the rest of the world to believe as we do, whatever it is we believe. Neither us, nor the Islamists, nor, you know, anyone else for that matter. But the issue of the individuals aside, what cannot be denied is that the French regime, both the previous one under Sarkozy and the current one under Holland, which have followed nearly identical foreign policies, is that they directly armed and funded Islamists in Libya and Syria into overthrowing or trying to overthrow the governments. And in Libya, they directly served as the air force bombing into power Islamists that have turned Libya into a devastated, warlord-torn wasteland. And that's NATO's big success there that they were trumpeting not too long ago. So it would be a terrible irony, I think, if it turns out that these attackers were from or had any kind of connections to Islamists in Libya or Syria, you know, this would be certainly a case of blowback.
Yeah, but the French are, as you mentioned, not only in Libya, but they are financing terrorists in Syria and have been with the FSA originally. And they, of course, they claim it's the moderate Muslims, but the guns and the money always end up in the hands of ISIS.
You know, the liver eaters instead of the head choppers and so on.
Right. Well, that's the thing, too, is ISIS put it all on film and chop the head off a couple of American journalists, but the FSA has been chopping off heads for years, barbecuing them, eating organs and all that. They're every bit as much a terrorist as ISIS.
Yeah, the Western press and governments, of course, make a big deal out of when a few journalists, many of them whom it must be said, were openly sympathetic and very biased towards the Syrian rebels, who later traded them to ISIS for cash to be killed. They make a big deal when a white Western journalist is killed, but when a Syrian journalist are beheaded, or when Syrian military or citizens defending their homes and family for the last 3 or 4 years have been beheaded in the hundreds, and Iraqis as well, the Western world doesn't care because, of course, they're, you know, Arabic, you know, dark-skinned people. Some of them of a different faith. Some of them of Christian faith. There's a lot of Christians, Orthodox Christians in Syria. In fact, 300,000 Orthodox Christians fled the liberation of Iraq into Syria, and now many of them had to flee again from the U.S.-backed jihadism in Syria. And the Orthodox Christian community in Syria, in fact, all of the Christian communities in Syria have largely been behind the government, not necessarily because they are pro-Assad, but because they know who and what these, quote, rebels, unquote, are and what would happen to them if they succeeded in coming to power and established some kind of fundamentalist caliphate across the region.
Yeah, exactly. People who are fighting against these factions are on Assad's side by default, since he's the team that has a military trying to defend them. But it doesn't matter. It's not like they agree with all his policies. It's just the choice between that or absolute fundamentalist psychopaths. Of course, yeah, and they're just defending themselves. I mean, they're pro-Syria is what they are. They're defending their own homes. And they often get painted as pro-Assad, but even if Assad didn't exist, they'd still be defending their homes. If you just imagine any other country, if America was invaded and people were getting attacked, people would fight back, not because they support Obama, but because they support America. Because they support themselves. What has to be remembered
in Syria is that this is an ethno-religious class. When you say Syrians, you have to be very specific of what you're talking about, because while a majority of the Syrian population are Sunni Arabs, there is a large Alawite population, there are large Christian populations. Many of the Sunni Arabs are more secular and urban, and they tend to not support they tend to support the government. And there's a number of other minorities, the Kurds and many others. Syria is a real hodgepodge. And I've been no big fan of Bashar al-Assad for many years. In fact, the West was celebrating him and his neoliberal reforms in Syria for many years, right up until the current crisis, when they saw the opportunity to get rid of him under the pretext of this Arab Spring meme. But most of the people there are not fighting for Assad. They're fighting against what is most certainly a Sunni Islamist rebellion of an Sunni Islamist of a particular Wahhabist bent, it must be said. And they're fighting for the Syrian state. And Syrian state is no more a model of freedom and democracy than the United States is, maybe even less in many respects. But what it is a multi-ethnic and multi-confessional state that has managed to keep a modicum of peace in Syria, at least for the last two decades, which has completely failed. Really destroyed any chance of having a stable, peaceful state in the region. We've seen what happened in Iraq and Libya when U.S. Cookie stamped, first past the post, winner take all, liberal capitalist democracy is imported into one of these countries where the majority of people's identity is not based on class or superficial culture war issues, but on genuine ethnic and religious divisions, creating permanent entrenched minorities. It's a nasty.
Well, one begets the other, because if you put in some kind of nepotistic faction, then you're going to create the counter effect to that too. If you're going to put in some Sunnis or Shiites or whoever who are only going to use the government as a managerial arm for their own tribe to award government jobs and money and stuff to themselves at the exclusion of everyone else, then eventually everyone else is going to have a mirror image of that and try to remove them and put themselves in power for their own nepotistic reasons, that kind of thing. And again, another allegory, like with Saddam, again, those fighting against the occupation and people dumping depleted uranium on them and everything else weren't supporting Saddam. They were supporting themselves and fighting for Iraq, not the leader on the hill, as it's painted in the media.
Or for their own particular ethno religious tribe.
Right. Yeah.
If not for the Iraqi state. Yes.
Well, you said the U.S. has been financing and France has been financing these terrorists in Libya and Syria. And it's not that I disagree. I think it's a big claim, but how exactly is ISIS related to the U.S.? Says it, the policy for a lot of people in Syria is very confusing, because first, the U.S. is supporting these FSA guys who are going around chopping off heads and everything, and then ISIS comes on the scene, and the U.S. is fighting both Syria and ISIS, and Syria is also fighting ISIS and the FSA. Why doesn't America have a clear policy what they want to go on? Do they want to support the government and get rid of ISIS first? They want to try and fight two factions at the same time who are also fighting each other? Mm-hmm. Or is that the whole point, to cause chaos in the region?
Okay, well, I know the chaos principle, and I don't believe that the U.S. Government, the U.S. policy thinkers, military, go into a region and intend to cause chaos. I do not believe that. And I say that as a U.S. military veteran and having considerable experience in the military and strategic studies area. What I do believe is that when the U.S. goes in under a continuously delusional ideological principles of being able to export their particular society and impose it on another people, as if deep inside every black, brown, or yellow person out there in the world is a little Western liberal consumer that just needs to be liberated. This policy has failed again and again and again, but the U.S. government keeps making it. We've seen this backing the enemy of my enemy policies in Afghanistan, in Yemen, in Iraq, in Libya, and Syria now. And the U.S. just doesn't learn its lesson. But when it does create chaos, what the U.S. always does very well is learns to manage it and try to use it to its advantage, both the CIA and the State Department. And those aren't always on the same page, it must be said. We have to remember that the institutions of the United States quite often end up at odds with each other. With a general picture. But how exactly has the U.S. created ISIS? Well, you have to really understand what ISIS is. ISIS evolved 100% out of direct blowback from repeated and continuous U.S. and other Western countries and their GCC allies, the Gulf dictatorships, interference in Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon. And that's exactly what ISIS comes out of. But it is not just general blowback, resentment, chaos that we're talking here. But there is also very direct links between the United States and ISIS. Reports in the Washington Post a half a year ago were making quite clear from interviews done with ISIS fighters and commanders that many of them had been trained, funded, and armed by the United States at military bases in Jordan, at military bases in Turkey, and many of them actually came to Syria and Iraq, as many jihadists have come from all around the world to fight for this jihad in Syria, from Libya, where they were trained during the Libyan, if we want to call it a civil war, the Libyan coup that the West staged by supporting Islamists in that country.
I'd add the word mercenary Islamist.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, mercenaries. Yeah. I mean, it would be an exact truth, because if you're paying attention to what's going on there, the U.S. government announced just in the second week of December that they would stop paying the salaries. This is the U.S. taxpayer. You are going to stop paying the salaries of rebels in Syria.
Well, not me. I'm in Japan. But
You're in Japan, but many of your listeners are in the United States. This goes the same for many other Western countries as well. I wouldn't be surprised if Japan's got a finger in that particular cash pot myself. The U.S. has been paying the salaries of the Syrian rebels for years now. Their salaries to fight against the Syrian government. So they are 100% not only jihadists, but also mercenaries as well. That is exactly correct.
I agree with the point on ISIS and the mercenaries, but just to play devil's advocate on the chaos point, I think you may be right that they just have grandiose fantasies of everybody loves democracy, and if we just bomb enough stuff, they'll see the light. But I think there's two things going on. You do have a faction like that, and I can name some people like that. But I think also there's a faction, like you said, all these guys don't agree with each other, who actually wanted and planned to have sectarian violence. And I say that because the Israeli policy papers on Syria specifically laid out, I'm talking about Oded Yanan, how they could divide up Iraq and Syria and get different sectarian factions to fight each other, and how every Arab-on-Arab conflict benefited their agenda. And so when you see it happen exactly as they planned out, I even said, well, with Iraq, they planned out how which area would be what, Kurdish north and Shiites here, Sunnis here, and then the whole goal was to push it into Syria. It makes me think that now this kind of chaos, not like they can micromanage all the murdering, but they did want to foster sectarian violence by getting rid of the strongman and allow it to fall apart. And this was an intentional plan. Now, that was the Israeli plan, not the U.S. plan, but really, they're seldom separate.
Oh, Oh, absolutely. I mean, the U.S. Absolutely goes out of its way and deliberately tries to foster and exacerbate ethno-religious, political, economic tensions. This is called in U.S. military parlance, unconventional warfare. There's a manual on it. I mean, you can look it up, some pretty recent versions of it on the internet.
There's a manual on it.
There's a manual. I mean, I'm sure there's many other manuals, but this is a public manual on how their primary mission, they see the primary war mission of the United States the present time and in coming years to be unconventional warfare. And they specifically say to exploit ethno-religious, political, other tensions and divides in countries in order to turn those divisions into a weapon of U.S. foreign policy to enact U.S. foreign policy goals. It's not even hidden. It's open. It's said in those words. The fact that Western journalists don't regularly talk about these things and see them when they happen again and again, really shows you what an ideological, self-censoring propaganda arm the Western mainstream media has become.
I wonder how much of the Orientalization is sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, because it seemed like in Iraq, at least, I don't know as much about Libya, but in Iraq, Sunnis and Shiites used to intermarry, and it just wasn't so rigid. After you reported enough, I see what I think is one group of fanatics creates neighboring fanatics, because it's the only defense you can have. If one group is ethnically or racially unified, then by their very existence, they force others to have to do the same to defend themselves. You know what I mean? It becomes a cycle of revenge killing, kind of like in Ireland. It was never like that. But once you get it started, then...
Oh, absolutely. Then it all spirals out of control. And we can see that right now in Iraq with ISIS. ISIS is most definitely a particularly a Salafist, Sunni Arab movement. But quite... definitely, there are Shiite groups sick of being slaughtered and bombed by ISIS at this point, who are forming very bloodthirsty units of their own to fight back, and doing so far more effectively than the Iraqi army was able to do. And that's a very interesting thing about ISIS. We wanted to talk about how it was created with the U.S., and we already talked about the blowback element, and we talked about the financing and training of all of these rebels who would later go on to join ISIS, sometimes almost immediately after they get out of U.S. training. But another thing is that many of the ISIS leaders are actually former Ba'athist Iraq generals who were in U.S. prison camps, who were tortured in Iraq. And interviews with them show that it is there that they discovered the extreme form of religion that they adopted. And they are dead set on revenge against the United States and forming a state of their own out of, not only Iraq, but across this greater Levant region. This Sunni Islamic caliphate. So once again, this unintended consequences, blowback, funding, torture has, directly led to ISIS. So this is another monster of the U.S. creation. And it must be said, I do not believe that the U.S. is seriously fighting ISIS.
I don't either.
No, I think it's
just an excuse theater of war for that trillion-dollar F-35.
Yeah, these are token airstrikes. I mean, anyone with military experience should be able to tell that the U.S. is certainly not waging a serious campaign against them. They are making token efforts. I've seen that many of the targets they've actually been hitting in Syria appear far more to be grain silos, oil refineries, elements infrastructure, of infrastructure, Syrian infrastructure.
Yeah. Now, the IMF will be there soon.
Yeah, I haven't seen any direct strikes on Syria, the Syrian government forces, by the U.S. yet, but I would not be surprised. In fact, I fully expect that to be down the line somewhere. The U.S. Is quite open, that they are training another batch, this one sure to be truly moderate Islamists in Turkey and in Saudi Arabia and Jordan again right now. This is the boots on the ground that they think they will need. And once again, we fully expect most of them to pick up and join ISIS. I don't know why the U.S. I can't see that the U.S. Would keep falling for this, but we really shouldn't underestimate the ideological blinders that so many in the State Department are operating under. That same article I mentioned earlier in the Washington Post from a few months ago quotes an anonymous interview with an Arab intelligence official, whom I think we can probably assume is from Jordan, from the nature of the conversation, as a best guess, said that he was informing, that many of them were informing the U.S. intelligence agents that, you know, many of the people you're training are, you know, extreme Islamist radicals. And the U.S. intelligence people replied to them, we know they are. But the people in the White House, the people in the State Department, they don't believe it. They don't want to believe it. I wouldn't be at all surprised.
All the people they tortured trying to say, hey, can you say Saddam was involved in 9/11?
Yeah.
No? We'll just keep torturing you because he's got to be, because we decided he was in our imaginary universe. You know?
Yeah, and while we are criticizing the Bush administration for its torture, and some small part of it, I am quite certain, continues rendition and torture under Obama, we have to remember that the Obama regime didn't just get rid of the policy of torture and rendition. They changed it. Rather than the messy policy of kidnapping and torture, they simply mass execute. They assassinate thousands of people extrajudicially and extraterritorially around the world with Obama's fleet of flying murder drones. I mean, we have
including
a U.S.
Americans.
Including American citizens, without a trial, without any kind of real oversight whatsoever. I mean, we have a president, a U.S. president, a Democrat, who has a kill list, a disposition matrix to constantly add new names to that list, an assassination czar, and who is quoted by some of his own aides as saying, it turns out I'm pretty good at killing people.
It's not war, it's kinetic military action.
Yeah, kinetic military action.
It's redundant. How can it be action and not be kinetic, you know? Like.
Yeah, the military is excellent at coming up with new euphemisms every decade or so to reframe what they're doing for the press.
Well, it's not torture; it's enhanced interrogation techniques.
Yeah, well,
and they're not POWs; they're enemy combatants.
As a U.S. military veteran, the number one question that anytime anyone tries to provide an excuse for this torture, saying it's not really torture or whatever it is, would you be fine with it being done to American servicemen and servicewomen? And if you're not, then it's torture.
American exceptionalism.
Yeah, well, that's American exceptionalism once again, of course.
But going back to France, because I see this weird thing, and I guess you would kind of answer this in the beginning of the show when you said when there is chaos, they learn how to manage it, whether they cause it or not. They do end up managing it in the end, because you see ISIS there in Syria, and they're getting treated in Israeli hospitals, and Israel's bombing and Syria periodically and shooting down planes and treating ISIS fighters, and ISIS never attacks the Israelis. They're just concerned
Al-Qaeda, ISIS, they never, ever.
Never. No one hits the Israelis, and they're running the U.S.
I keep coming
policy.
Back to that myself, and I don't want, I try very, very hard to avoid conspiracy theory and stick with conspiracy fact. But that glaring fact continues to pop up in my face.
Yeah, it's a glaring fact, and I'm not going to speculate. I can just say, like, the Iraq War.
I'll stay away from it myself. We'll just note it and save it for further use.
Well, I'm just pointing it out because people are going to ask me why I didn't say it if I don't. So, but the Iraq War was sold by a bunch of Israeli partisans to the U.S. I mean, all the pre-war lies came from the Office of Special Plans and these neocons. It wasn't from big oil. It wasn't for petrodollar or anything like that. It was from Wolfowitz and Feith and Pearl and specific policies for Israeli interests. The U.S. didn't really gain anything by attacking Iraq. But anyway, what I was saying, well, I'm tying this into France again, and that also that little story when I was talking about the used car salesman, something that was equally as stupid was the story of blaming the Egyptian revolution, the first or second one, on this movie that was made about... what was it? Muhammad having the sex with the kid Muhammad. Or yeah, something like really, that, whatever. Some silly movie, and they blamed Benghazi.
It wasn't even really a movie. It was a B-movie role intended just as a direct insult and to
cause. Oh, yeah. Well, the problem is the tension started before the movie came out. And
oh, absolutely.
When they're talking about the assassination in Benghazi, they'd already tried to kill him 3 times. All prior to the film and everything, before all that, before they finally got him. So that wasn't the reason. So when that story was totally ridiculous, but it was accepted in the press. And so when I see this story about cartoon satirists getting bombed because they made fun of the prophet, it may be the case, but it just sounds a lot like that story about the stupid movie that was made and trying to blame it all on that rather than what was really going on. You know, people living on $2 a day and so on. That couldn't possibly be a reason. It's got to be a movie. It's got to be something theatrical. And it's just, it bothers me that if we're going to say, okay, let's say they really are Islamic fanatics and they're not just on the payroll with a mixture of some useful idiots who probably are fanatics, but the managerial, like, leadership there that's getting paid from Qatar to the U.S., the Israelis, whoever, and they never attack the targets like that. So they're going to hit a magazine, but they're not going to bomb any of the bankers or the French politicians or Americans or Israelis who've actually murdered millions of Muslims. They're going to kill people drawing cartoons instead. That offends them more than the people actually slaughtering their babies and so on. And so I don't buy it. Is it because it's just an easier target to hit, or what's going on? Because they haven't even attempted to shoot one of these guys. Yeah, none of the neocons.
I'm gonna stick with what we know for right now. Anything is possible, and I'm certainly not completely discounting it. I mean, we've seen enough of these things come to light with the CIA and so far. But there really are lots of people out there perfectly willing to kill over the issue of Islamic iconography, the drawing of the Prophet Muhammad. And we shouldn't assume that these people are particularly worldly as able to identify who the root source of their oppression is coming from in the West.
All right, fair enough.
These may not be the most intelligent, the most worldly people in the world. You know, there's plenty of people, most people in the United States can't identify, you know, the particular origins of their repression within the United States, of their own corporations, financial institutions, and so on. So we shouldn't necessarily assume that a group of Islamics who have most of their education from a Saudi-funded madrasa in Libya and a U.S. military training camp can really identify anything but the most obvious, insultful images that they get repeated to them.
Fair enough. You know, if no one's attacking the Federal Reserve, but if a newspaper put up enough offensive pictures of Jesus, they might get bombed by somebody. So I can see that. Fair enough.
Yeah, I'm just going to go with that until we have better evidence. And when we have evidence, even the slightest evidence that might look further, then we look further into that.
Well, it's my fault for bringing it up because it's a brand new story and we really haven't had time to digest what happened, who actually did it. We have some guesses, but the media usually gets it wrong in the first go around. So we'll see. France hasn't actually been hit in a very long time. They certainly do a lot of offense in Africa and so on, but they haven't had an attack like the U.S. or Britain in a while.
No, and one of the interesting things I found is that France was actually one of the countries when the UN Security Council just recently voted on the issue of recognizing Palestinian statehood, France was the lone Western country to vote yes. with China, Russia, and you know, much of the rest of the world. The country, the U.S., of course, ended up vetoing it, and the U.K. Did not vote for it as well. But France actually did vote for it. And the fact that France did vote for it, and that is played absolutely no, had no effect on this attack or anything else, shows how far the issue of Palestinian statehood and the Palestinian nation has fallen from the minds of the Arab street. They're simply not a huge concern to them anymore.
Well, it does still fit with my speculation earlier. Oh, you voted for Palestinian statehood? Here's a terrorist attack suddenly. People are going to say it. Because they've been making those cartoons forever. Why now? Why right after this vote?
That is a fair question. Why now? Certainly there's been nothing more provocative than recently. I'll just let that one hang.
Are we sure? Wasn't there anything especially worse than usual that they've been drawing? I don't know. I don't read the French cartoons in Japan.
No. the worst from what I have seen, the most recent worst was no particular worse in my mind to what they have done over the past few years. I don't, again, read that magazine regularly. I don't claim to know exactly what will offend a Salafist Islamic fanatic, first and foremost.
Just about anything. They're the most touchy group other than maybe feminist.
Evangelicals in the United States.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Forget them.
Yeah, yeah, they're on par. They get mad at Harry Potter, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows what's going to offend somebody, but... like what the comedian Steve Hughes says, if you're offended, you know, nothing happens. Just be offended. But, you know, as a newspaper or a magazine, I don't know, not a newspaper, magazine, sorry. You got to have some responsibility.
We live in a global world. And the real world outside of any kind of rhetorical and often hypocritical ideas of freedoms, the real world has consequences. That's just something that, people need to deal with. And I think that when dealing with other cultures and religions, that we should try to have a modicum of respect when dealing with them and their beliefs. Even if we don't believe it, even if we don't particularly like it, if it's not our country, then we should have a modicum of respect, if not, you know, tolerance for it.
Well, I'll tell you, like I told Peter Lavelle, you just need to watch Rocky IV a few more times. That's your problem.
Yeah, well, Rocky IV. I'm the American who immigrated to Russia and married a Crimean, so that's probably not the best one to pick up to me. But bringing up Peter Lavelle is a good friend of mine going back more than a decade here in Moscow. And the interview you did with him, both your questions and his answers, I thought was truly excellent. And I could only hope that our interview manages even a fraction of the substance and depth that that interview got in.
Oh, well, thanks. Well, thanks to him. He makes it easy. Staying on that topic, I saw you on Crosstalk, which is Peter's show there on RT, and there was some... I don't remember if he was an American or an Israeli stooge, some Zionist on there.
An Israeli-American. Okay.
The diaspora is the worst kind.
Yes.
He was talking about Peter, somebody asked him, it was you, I think, you, because you, it was a, as a veteran, you specified, if you're so concerned about ISIS and Assad in Syria, how come the Israelis aren't in there giving their sons and daughters for this cause? And he just stumbled all over himself, blah, 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 blah. And then you mentioned how the Israeli hospitals are treating ISIS fighters, and he tried to act like, yeah, see, we're so humanitarian.
yeah, humanitarianism for terrorism, yes, because...
He was calling for American boots on the ground, but he didn't want to get Israel's hands dirty.
Yeah, the whole world, I'm sure, buys the humanitarian record of the Israeli regime as being so...
Well, it's the ally we can never use.
Yeah.
Because were they to ever get involved in Iraq, Syria, or anything like that, it would just unify everybody against them.
The threat is that that would incite the entire Arabic, the entire Islamic world against them. So that's, of course, why they can't get directly involved. But the truth is, they
wouldn't put Saudi Arabia against them. They'll never go against them.
Yeah, what I neglected to bring up, I did bring up that the Israelis were being treated in their hospitals, and I kicked myself asswards.
Yeah, ISIS was being treated in Israeli hospitals.
Yeah, ISIS being treated in Israeli hospitals. I kicked myself afterwards for neglecting to mention some other facts that have just come up in the past 2 months. A UN report detailed that they had clear evidence that the Israeli military was in constant communication and coordination with the Syrian rebels in the Golan Heights area and elsewhere in southern Syria. And that Israel had just 2 weeks prior to that debate bombed Syria again for the fifth time over the last 18 months. Okay. And I can't believe myself that I forgot this. It shows we have all, I think, come to a certain amount of acceptance that Israel, the Israeli regime, just continually strikes militarily, that is an act of aggression against another state, against all of its neighbors, not only the occupied Palestine, but Lebanon, Syria, and so on, Iran. If
Iraq
it's so
and
chooses,
Egypt, too, and they hit, helped Egypt, with Stuxnet.
Whenever it wants, and because of the shelter of U.S. and other Western state political protection and the veto at the Security Council, nothing is ever done, and the press barely bats an eye when it happens. But Israel is completely involved in this effort to overthrow the Syrian government. I know they've tried to play this game all along, that no, they really weren't. But to believe the U.S. is dedicated to something, Saudi Arabia is dedicated to something, and the other member of that trifecta for hegemony in the Middle East, Israel, is not fully involved as well, is completely naive, completely ludicrous. And then this Israeli crown on that episode of Crosstalk, ostensibly about Turkey and Turkey's involvement in Syria, he tried to claim that Israel was not involved in Syria, that it was completely outside of the conflict.
It's their own policy papers. I mean, that's the whole
script. Not only Syrian rebels, but ISIS fighters in their hospitals. They're in constant coordination with them, according to the United Nations. And they're continually bombing. They're continually bombing Syria.
Somebody wants a treat in the back there.
I apologize for that.
It's okay. I mean, it's ANC report. It's whatever. It's a dog. We'll just say it again if we have to. But yeah, they've continually bombed them 5 times, and then they have also shot down a couple aircraft.
Yes.
In addition to the bombings. There in the Golan Heights, which is occupied territory, 30% of which was retaken by Assad's father. Of course, the whole of it used to be part of Syria, and the Israelis stole that in the 67 war. So,
yes.
But, yeah, you're right. Israel gets a pass. I mean, they can openly bomb children. You see people, it's the low point of some adult's life, I think, when they're on Facebook, Twitter, or whatever, frantically typing away about why it's okay some babies were killed, like human shields or whatever their excuse is. They're like, you're an adult and you've reached a point in your life where you're defending killing babies, you know.
Yeah. I'm no particular fan of Hamas. Okay, but
oh, me either. It's a government.
What most recently has gone on? I mean, over the last course of the 60 years of the occupation, you know, let's not forget that. But the most recent massacres, the complete destruction in Gaza is just unquestionably, even if you're not a supporter of Hamas, which I am not, a war crime, crimes against humanity. It's just simply unspeakable. And most interestingly, although the U.S. just vetoed Palestinian statehood again, just today, I don't know if you've heard, Ban Ki-moon, the U.N. Secretary General, Western quisling that he usually is, announced that Palestine would be joining the International Criminal Court. April 1st. And amazingly, this does not seem to be an April Fool's joke. And that is really going to be important. And Israel is really going to lose it.
Because they can bring them up on war crimes then.
Yes, they can charge them for war crimes. And the U.S. will no longer be able to exercise their veto to shelter them. So this is a new ball game.
For people who don't know, the U.S. usually, sometimes they vote 141-1, with the U.S. being the only outstanding member,
yes.
Just to block anything for the sake of protecting Israel. I mean, that's how deeply tied they are to AIPAC.
Yeah, I don't know how many times the U.S. has exercised its veto for Israel at this point. I think it's well into the 50s. I've honestly lost track. The most recent was, again, just this last year. But it comes up at least once, if not several times every year. So, but they will no longer be able to do that. And it must be remembered that the U.S. itself is not a signatory to the International Criminal Court because they refuse to let any other country judge their military operations and their generals and politicians. Not that they hold them accountable themselves, obviously, with Obama, the assassinator, now giving the Bush regime a pass even when it openly admits its torture.
It's so ironic because when Obama was preaching before the first time he got elected, it was all about transparency.
protecting whistleblowers.
Protecting whistleblowers.
Pulling out of Iraq.
Gitmo. There are more people in Gitmo now than he started.
Oh, yes, yes. And I have to be perfectly honest. I used to organize for the Democratic Party. Here in Russia, I was head of Democrats Abroad here. Nothing to do with Russia per se, but just organizing American expats, of which there are several thousand here, to help them vote, working with the U.S. Embassy to do that. And I campaigned for both Kerry and for Obama. And when Obama came around, I was in London at the time doing my post-grad in London at the London School of Economics. And once again, I fell for the trick, which I will no longer again fall for. And I thought nothing could be worse than Bush. Nothing could be worse than Bush. And I know I will be out protesting Obama the next day, but I registered hundreds of people to vote for Obama and, fooled me again.
But that's the thing, because you're a smart guy and you fell for the propaganda. And because people watch TV and rather than just looking at the guy's Senate record and knowing
it must be said, I didn't fall for the propaganda. I simply made the false lesser of two evil choices.
Okay.
And discovered how false that is again, and I will never make that false choice again. I'm completely divorced from U.S. politics at this point. And I recognize that neither party of the duopoly is redeemable, no matter who might get elected. That's simply the nature of the corrupted American political system.
Well, I like what Ralph Nader's father told him. But this, I don't know if he really told him this, but this is what Nader said. He said when he was little, so this is back in dinosaur times, but when Ralph Nader was a child, he said, "Dad, we really need a third party, a viable third party." And his dad sort of looked up from the paper and said, "I'd settle for a second one."
I think there's a lot of truth to that. Certainly in terms of foreign policy. There is, I know you call yourself the neocon report.
Anti-neocon report.
the anti-neocon report. But there, if you're familiar with Stephen Walt, at Harvard's JFK School of Government, he writes a regular column for Foreign Policy magazine, and he's probably one of the few worth reading on that tabloid that foreign policy has become. Stephen Walt wrote an article, the 10 signs that you are a humanitarian, 10 warning signs of humanitarian imperialism. And I really suggest anyone out there to go to read that and to take a look. And it clearly pointed out in the beginning of that article and through the course of it that really in today's U.S. foreign policy system, as clearly demonstrated between the real differences between the Bush and the Obama foreign policy, that there is no difference between a neocon and a humanitarian interventionist on the Democratic side. They are simply flip coins. They come from the exact same training. They come from the exact same mentors. These people are flip sides of the same coin.
Well, that's why we say neocon instead of conservative. I mean, you don't have to say neoliberal because the liberals have always been that way. I mean, this is just now that you have conservative acting like the left. But the only real difference between them, and I'm talking about the U.S., because when you say neoliberal in Europe, that actually is what's like the opposite. You know, Liberal Party in the U.K. or Japan is actually the conservatives, and it's labored as a, well, anyway, it's like reverse of the U.S. But the only difference between the Republicans and Democrats as far as neocons go is the way they demographically brand themselves. And one thing that the Democrats are better at is that they couch it in humanitarianism. And you saw this back when the left would stealing land from Indians or whatever. They wouldn't just do it like with religious fervor like the right would. They would say it was for environmental reasons or some kind of do-gooder label to slap on top of it. But then they did all the exact same actions as the right, whereas the right would just say, God said so, and so on. Yeah. So the only difference is how they rationalize their position, but it all ends up with the same result.
Oh, yeah, I think you're exactly right. It is a type of demographic branding. Look at when Bush launched the Iraq wars, at least, even if it didn't do any good, but simply for the type of catharsis it brings. We had millions of Americans out protesting in the street against Bush's wars. Where were these people? Where was the Hollywood celebrities? Where is the American anti-war movement for Obama's wars, for Libya, for Syria, for the drone assassinations of thousands, including hundreds of innocents, without trial? Extraterritorially around the world.
And for Iraq for the first few years.
And Iraq.
Because we only got out of Iraq because the Iraqi government kicked us out.
Now we're back in Iraq. We're bombing in Syria as well. And the U.S. is hit deep with this putsch and the civil war in Ukraine as well, which has cost the lives of some 5,000 people, including two members of my own family in the Donbas.
Oh, man. Yeah, that is something, because there was a huge anti-war movement, and I said I was at the RNC protests and things, and from my perspective, it wasn't really an anti-war protest; it was an anti-Bush protest.
Yeah, yeah, that's a fair. And in hindsight, we can certainly see that now.
But the left psychologically, there's a good paper about the left's psychological association to shame and shaming and the way they sort of brand these groups. And what they do is you just have two psychological methods of creating followers with these different brands. And so the right side likes to use fear and religiosity and things like that. So the way they'll sell a war is saying,
empire,
you can't let the smoking gun be
power,
a mushroom cloud and so on. And the left side likes to pander to paternalism and guilt and shame. Yeah, so they'll say, we're liberating the Kurds, or we're going to help women go to school in Afghanistan, and then it doesn't matter what the result is.
Trivialize the actual situation and ethnic religious tensions down to black and white Manichaean parables.
If you say you're helping a minority, the left is sold. And so even though they're very detrimental policies of welfare, affirmative action and stuff, that have the reversed effect of what they said they wanted, they still support it because they don't really go deeper than the label. And the right does the same thing. It's just, like I said, they just try to brand themselves differently with these two different types of psychological camps.
Sure, just pay attention to sheep. Samantha Powers or Susan Rice, and they are neocons through and through.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. The neocon, it started, it was saying these ex-leftists that took kind of divided the conservative party, but now it's just an ideology of interventionism,
empire.
And you can really just see it left or right. It's basically where the former Cold Warrior / religious fanatic Zionist train wreck, and it's everything bad from both parties.
Yeah, we should admit American exceptionalism is an ideology of empire.
Yeah,
plain and simple. There's no There's no two ways about it. Let's call
it the Holocaust when the Germans do it, but when you kill 3 million in Vietnam and Laos, even though those are millions of people too, it's not a Holocaust when we do it because we're America.
Yes.
Yeah, so maybe we should be fighting the psychology. Maybe we should hit the root instead of constantly pointing out where we go wrong. Maybe we're attacking the wrong subjects here. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I just gave up. I left and joined the, you want to say, the opposite side. So gave up fighting that battle domestically, politically.
Yeah, I got out of there too. Well, I'm sorry to hear what happened to you personally in the Ukraine. I was not aware of that.
I'd
like to talk about Ukraine on another show in the future, though.
Absolutely. I'd love that.
That'd be great.
I have a lot to say about that.
Yeah, I know you do.
In fact, I've talked. This is actually a little bit of a blessing and a reprieve for me because RT media, even BBC, everything else, I've talked nothing but Ukraine for the past year now, and it's a little old even for me.
Well, that's the thing why I asked you about ISIS is I figured you've already been asked the same questions a lot on Ukraine, and it's like I can just link to RT or BBC or things you've already said. I don't need you to come over here and say the same stuff. So when I brought you on, but I do want to bring you on because I have some different questions than what you've been asked on Ukraine that I've heard anyway. So I'll bring you on next time for that. And I appreciate all your time tonight, today. What is it, 6 or so in Moscow?
Yeah. Just 6, going on 6:30. Yep.
6:30. Yeah. 12:30.
Minus 22 Celsius.
Woo!
Yeah. It's a real winter. And when it's minus 22 Celsius in Moscow, you know what that means? It's time for Muscovites to eat ice cream.
Wow, of course.
Right. That's right. We eat ice cream on the street at minus 22, and that's not a joke.
Well, it's hard to eat anything else. It'd be frozen.
Yeah,
minus 22 for real?
Oh yeah, minus 22 Celsius. Yep. Yeah, and that's it gets worse. But we also get 30 degrees Celsius heat in the summer. Continental climate, so warm and cold.
Yeah, we get 40 over here, but
oh Jesus!
But we don't get the negative 22.
I couldn't handle 40. So I can handle the minus 22. I couldn't handle the 40.
I'm from a desert island that has cactuses and things, so I'm okay with the heat, but I don't want to deal with negative 22 or anything. That's just...
Yeah, I grew up in bumfuck Pennsylvania, so...
There you go.
I can handle the cold.
All right, well, enjoy the weather and the ice cream, and good luck to you. We'll have you back on and talk Ukraine and some other things. I like Absolutely. This dialogue. I play devil's advocate, and I don't really disagree. I'm just, letting it go, letting the ideas come out there. I wish ISIS would go away, but it looks like they're here to stay, and I completely agree with you and the ineffective, disingenuous bombing and propaganda.
Yeah, if your viewers take one thing away from this, remember, ISIS is 100% the U.S.'s creation, not just in blowback, but in many other ways as well.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you for your time, sir.
Thanks for having me, and thanks to everyone who listened to our rant here.
Now go outside in the negative 22 and yell, "Winter is coming." Folks, that was Mark Cibola on ANC Report. Please go to Indiegogo and kick in a donation. It keeps these podcasts going, as well as reports and everything else. I'm trying to get over to America to do some serious activism. DC, New York, LA is going to be a lot of trips. So please see the Indiegogo link on the right side of the page there. Give a few dollars if you can. Donate through PayPal if you want to set up a monthly. We're going to have downloadable podcasts. So if you live in an area with poor internet, which I would consider something like, the whole United States, and you're listening to a show and then suddenly you drive through a bad pocket and it turns off, well, for a very, very small amount of money, you can sign up to become a premium member and download the shows. And if you're already donating money, then you will get that for free as soon as it's available. It should be very, very soon. Please, again, Indiegogo, send me over to LA, DC, and New York. Up next will be Doug Valentine. We're going to be talking about the relationship between organized crime and law enforcement, particularly in New York City, NYPD.